One of the most obvious facts about the world is that there is evil in it. There's suffering in it. Now, we can break evil up into two parts. Moral or human evils, which are caused by human decisions, and natural evils. And those would be evils that are caused by earthquakes or famines, part of the natural course of the world. Now, there's a bit of an overlap between the two. One economist, Amartya Sen, has argued that there has never been a famine that wasn't avoidable. There was always enough food being produced on Earth, but people didn't want to share it. People guarded what they had too carefully, too violently, and so not enough food got around. You can look at volcanoes and say, well, look, there's a source of evil. But then you begin to ask the question, did people need to build their farms so close to them? But then on the other hand, there are certainly diseases and illnesses on Earth, cancer springs to mind, that aren't directly linked to human decisions. Yes, we can look at things like lung cancer. Cancer is caused by sexually transmitted diseases, and you can say, well, look, there's an element of human choice there. But there are other types of cancer that strike us that have no connection at all with human decision. So you've got these two types of evil in the world. You've got evil caused by human decision, and that's moral evil, and you've got natural evil. So in comes the problem of evil, and that's very, very simply put. God is supposed to be good. God is supposed to be all-powerful. If God is all-powerful, he could stop suffering. If God is perfectly good, he would stop suffering. But there is suffering. Therefore, there's no God. So the argument goes. God, if there was a God, he could stop suffering. If there was a God, he would stop suffering. But there is no suffering. But there is suffering. Therefore, there's no God. That's the argument. Well, Christians then have begun to look at the problem of evil, and not just Christians, Jews and Muslims, and have said, well, hang on a second, maybe God has good reason for allowing suffering. One reason why there might be suffering is that God gave us the gift of free will. Now, free will means that we can decide for ourselves what we want to do, and that gives us a tremendous amount of dignity. We're the only things in the universe that can say no to God, that can refuse to do what God wants. There's nothing else in the universe that can do that. And it also means that human beings can love. They can freely sacrifice for others. So there can only really be true love where there's free will. But humans didn't use their free will the way God wanted. They decided to say no to God. They didn't give their love to God. They gave love to themselves. And therefore, wickedness and evil and chaos entered the world. So that's one reason why there might be some suffering. Another reason might be that human beings needed danger in the world to learn courage. They needed pain in the world to learn compassion. We needed to learn how to help and to support each other. And so that's a way of building our souls in the world, a way of strengthening us, a way of growing closer to God. So that's another reason God could have allowed suffering in the world. And by learning compassion, we have to encounter suffering. By misusing our free will, we bring more suffering into the world. By moving away from God, we don't have access to comfort when we suffer. We lose a source of God's guidance, and that increases the amount of suffering in the world. And so these are reasons why God might have allowed suffering to occur. It's not that God created the world to have suffering in it. It's not that God thinks that suffering is in and of itself a good thing. It's that suffering can bring about a greater good. The difficulty is, though, that sometimes we encounter suffering in the world that doesn't seem to bring about any good. So, for example, you can consider a child dying in the gutter in a country because they're poor, and nobody notices that child. Nobody has in any way learned how to be compassionate because the child has died unnoticed. And the child's free will hasn't got it into that situation. And it would be of no comfort to the child to know that the reason that it was starving to death in the gutter was because God gave its parents free will and they misused that free will. Or that God gave the society free will and society misused it. The child's complaint to God could be, listen, you said in the Bible not just that you loved the human race, you said that you loved every individual human being and that you know all the hairs on my head. and that you know exactly who I am. Now, if you love me, why are you letting me die this way? That could be the child's complaint to God. And so sometimes it seems that we come across particular examples of evil that serve no greater purpose, particular examples of evil that seem horrendous, that there could be no justification for them, and that are so terrible that that child's life just doesn't seem worth it. In other words, you would look at that, you could look at some children who are suffering and say, listen, it would be better for that child that it had never been born. Better for that person never to have existed than for them to have undergone so much suffering. Again, while there's a challenge here for Christians, and there's a challenge here for people who believe in God, and this seems to be the strongest argument against God's existence, that there are these examples of suffering that seem to serve no greater purpose. Christians reply in one of two ways. They either talk about the resurrection or they talk about the cross. We'll start with the resurrection first. The resurrection says that God didn't just create us to live for 70 or 80 years on earth and then die and that was it. God created us to enjoy him forever. And one day God will create a new heavens and a new earth, that even though we've rebelled against God and we've turned against him from here and now, there's hope for the future. And the resurrection of Jesus Christ shows that there will be a new heavens and a new earth where these sorts of evils simply will not occur. And that God can wipe away every tear. And that child's life does not end when it dies in the gutter, but it can be raised again by God and a new life with him. And that anybody who wants that new life with God can have it. And therefore nobody will suffer evil that makes their life worthless. Unless they want to live a worthless life. Unless they want to deny God forever. But anybody who wants to dwell with God forever, anybody who wants to be in God's house forever and to dwell in God's kingdom forever and is prepared to hand their life over to him, gets that. So that's one response to evil, is the resurrection. The other response is the cross, and that's to say, think about the disciples on Good Friday. There was Jesus Christ, who had lived a good life, who had hurt no one, who had helped and healed the poor and the lame and the injured. And what's God done with him? He has allowed his enemies to crucify him. The most shameful death and one of the most painful deaths that Romans could devise. And Romans were very good at hurting people and shaming people. So on Good Friday, you could have looked at the cross and said, God has deserted Jesus. You could have said that God was not present there. You could have said that God wasn't with the disciples. And yet the opposite was true. In the Christian story, the cross is when God showed his love to us in the most perfect way possible, that God's only son died for those who didn't deserve it, and that God the Father's heart was broken watching his only son die, and that happened for us. And what we didn't realize on Good Friday is that very shortly afterwards God would raise his son from the dead. The problem that the disciples had was they could not see the big picture. That God had a plan that they could not take in. They couldn't believe that God would sacrifice for us. They couldn't believe that God would be that good. They couldn't believe that God could have a plan of a miracle so wonderful as the resurrection. Their imaginations couldn't take that in. So even that most terrible evil, the atonement, the crucifixion, actually God was able to bring good out of that, the greatest good possible. And this, so Christians say, well, look at the world around us now. Simply because you see an example of evil and you think, well, God could not have had any purpose in that, that doesn't mean that there is no purpose. There could well be one that we just simply cannot take in yet, and we need to recognize our own limitations. The problem with the problem of evil is that it assumes that God is just like us, and that he will act just like a big human being in the sky. The problem with the problem of evil is that it doesn't consider that God is vastly more intelligent than we are, and that God knows more than we are, and that God's power extends far beyond anything that we can imagine. And so that God could heal suffering with goods that we simply cannot even begin to take in here and now. So that's the first problem with the problem of evil. And it also assumes that this universe is all that there is, but that's not what Christianity teaches. Yes, there are examples of suffering in the world that would seem to indicate there's no God if this world is all there is. But Christianity and any religion teaches that there's more to the universe than just this world that we look at, than just the stars, the galaxies, that there's an eternal life ahead, and that there's a greatness to God's power that extends even beyond the power that's present in our universe. So that's the second problem with the problem of evil. Finally, the problem of evil for atheists, and this is a difficult one that I think atheists need to take on board. The atheist seems to be saying that there's so much evil in the world, or that there are certain types of evil in the world, that would make it better that the human race had never existed. Because what the atheist is saying is, listen, if God was a good, powerful, intelligent God, God would never have created human beings. God would never have created human beings and put them on earth. But what you're saying when you say that is, listen, overall, it would have been better if the human race had never existed. In other words, it's not worth our while being here. In other words, the human race is not only pointless, it's actually cruel that humans exist. And that would lead to the absurd conclusion that if somebody out there had a disease that would destroy the human race, he'd actually be doing a good thing. Because he'd be destroying suffering. He would be ending suffering and taking that out of the universe. Now, that's just absurd. That isn't a rational belief. Of course it's good that humans exist. Yes, there's suffering in the world, but we need something to hope for. If human beings are going to continue, we need something to hope for. We need to look for something greater than ourselves that gives us hope and a reason to go on. At some stage, every star in this universe will burn out of fuel. At some stage, the stars will die. And when light dies, life dies. And there'll be a lifeless universe. If human beings are not pointless, there must be something greater than this entire universe that can restore us home to life. And that gives us reason to believe in God and reason to believe in the resurrection and to hope in the resurrection, because we need reason to go on in the face of hopelessness.